So I got an interesting request from a listener. It's interesting. I just don't think of some of these show ideas. And so I appreciate any requests that are out there. And I've had a few here lately. And it helps me out more than you realize. Because there's times when it comes time to record a show and I don't always know what it is I want to record. I've got some opportunities at some interviews that I want to do. But it's so hard to coordinate that with other folks. So, because I need some folks can only meet with me during the day, and that's hard to do when you got a real job. But hey, I'm excited. I'll read a section of this email to you. The person who emailed it to me has requested to remain anonymous, just for some various reasons of their own. But anyway, so this is the email I got. What about a show on just the death visit? Death visits are so different, each one. I'm wondering about discussing how they are the same, but also so very different. From getting the call, to walking in, to how you speak to the family, prep the body, call to the funeral home. So that is a great request, and I had fun creating my outline for the show today. So without any further ado, let's get this thing rolling. This is James Dibben, and welcome to the Hospice Nursing Podcast. Well, hello, everyone, hospice nurses all over America, and welcome to your show. That's right. This is the only show that provides practical help for hospice nursing success. I'm your host, James Dibben, with confessionsofahospicenurse.net, and thanks for joining me today. Well, hey, so excited to bring you some new content here and look forward to talking death visits with you. And so just to give you a bit of a rundown here, the person who sent me this email, it actually had a lot more death visit questions in it. And so I built this whole show around that email. And then I decided towards the end to just share some various experiences I've had in hospice and what I did when it comes to death visits, my experiences, and then what I did and maybe what I learned, what I did correct, what maybe I didn't do correct, or just some things that I'm like, oh my gosh, I'll never do it like that again. So hopefully today you can learn from my successes and my failures. and hopefully that's a lot of shows are like that. Before I get started, you know, all of this is contingent on your individual state laws. So I really encourage you to try to do some research into your own state laws. State laws, each state law has different rules. I work right here on the Kansas and Missouri state line where I work right now here in the Kansas City area. There's a Kansas City, Missouri, and a Kansas City, Kansas, two different cities with kind of the same name, right? And just for the record, the Kansas City Chiefs play in Missouri, but we share them with our Kansas friends. Anyway, but you need to know, like, LPNs or LVNs can't pronounce in every state. In Missouri and in Kansas, they can do a pronounce, but in some states they can't, okay? So you've got to know your laws, and what I'm going to do today's show, you can definitely do in Missouri and Kansas. And from what I know about many other states, most of what I'm going to talk about, you can do in those other states as well. Okay. So I really think this covers most states, unless there's some weird laws and things like that, for the body and how, you know, how long it can stay in the home and things like that. And I'm going to cover what I know can be done in Missouri and Kansas, but it is your job to know what is allowed in your state, okay? And one thing I put on here, does there need to be an order to remove the body? And I even had this debate yesterday or conversation with my clinical director, because I'm like, okay, so the doctor's going to say, no, you can't send the body out. Sorry, it has to stay in the house. I mean, I don't know if you really truly need an order to remove the body. I think it's probably best practice, and we do it as well just to cover ourselves and get that order from the doctor. So probably I would recommend that you do have that order. And I just think it's very specific to agencies and facilities and things like that. So you've got to know your own policies and procedures for that, because if you're ever under a survey, that's what the surveyor is going to look at. Okay. Sorry, I needed a drink of my tea and I whacked my microphone boom arm. It'll be okay. Okay, so let's just go ahead and get started on this. And so it took me some time to build this outline in an order that kind of made sense. Okay. And what I'm getting ready to start out with, this is your first goal when you walk into a house. This needs to be in your mind. Now, the time frame to get it done is going to vary greatly. Okay. But your first goal is to pronounce the body and get a phone call to the funeral home, because it could be, depending on the time of day and what's just going on in general, you could be waiting an hour and a half, 2 hours, sometimes only 40 minutes, but you just can't predict how long it's going to take the funeral home to get there. And if you've been there for an hour and you've like done all this stuff for the patient and you've given them, you know, you've done your death bath and all that kind of stuff, and then you're like, oh crap, I need to call the funeral home. Well, you know, the clock, that 90-minute clock hasn't started ticking yet. So I try to remind my nurses, don't forget that really is your first goal. If you're in a situation where you can literally, maybe you have a family or whatever who's pretty much ready for this to be over and the body to be removed, you might be able to walk straight over to the patient, listen to them, watch your watch, get a time, and step away and call the funeral home. And that can happen. So my point to bringing this up first is just to remind everybody that this is really your goal. You want to get to that phone call to the funeral home as quick as possible, if at all you can. Okay. And so I put that at the beginning of my outline, and then we're going to get into a whole bunch of reasons why you might not be able to do that. But I like starting out with that. Because sometimes you can do this part quickly and you might be out of there in 90 minutes. Or if other things are going on, it could be a lot longer. And I want to kind of break down some of those other possibilities for you, just to give you some tips and tricks and hints and some ideas of what you could get in the way and how to manage some stuff. And like I said at the very end, let me see how many stories I have. I've got 1, 2, 3. I have about 8 little stories that I want to tell you as I go along. So who knows? This could end up being an hour-long show. We'll just see how it flows here. So we talked about your first goal. Now let's get into the meat of the subject, because it's not about you. We talk about that a lot on this show, that hospice is rarely about you, the nurse. It's really about everybody else, and it's your job to be the servant of all. And so we do have to be careful. You know, my first point on here is don't have any expectations. So while it is your number one goal to try to get to the point where you can call the funeral home, because that can sometimes be the big weight, it's still not about you, and you can't have a whole lot of expectations. So you can walk in the door having a want, but your expectations on the family needs to be open and ready for whatever they may throw your way, especially if you're making this visit after hours or for a colleague and you've never even met this family. So you really don't know for sure what you're walking into. Okay. And I think we need to remember, as hospice nurses, and if you're new to hospice, you're going to find this out, that this is one of many, many death visits that you're going to do in your hospice career. Depending on the roles that you take and the responsibilities that you have, you could end up doing hundreds of death visits. Okay. And that's why I really only can think of about 8 personal stories that I feel like that I can recall, even though I've done hundreds of death visits, because I've just done so many of them that only certain ones stick out in my mind. Okay. But the thing is, your family is going to remember this day and how it all goes down for the rest of their lives. And we could have, your agency, my agency, could have provided them with an amazing experience. And then somebody can come into the death visit and just usurp everything that has happened leading up to this day and turn it into just a horrible experience for everybody. So we really need to be cognizant of that. And as much as I want you to try to get to the funeral home phone call as soon as possible, we can't railroad everybody. The point to me mentioning that at the very beginning is because I don't want nurses to forget that they do need to get to that call quickly so that they're not stuck at houses for an unreasonable amount of time. But they're going to remember this day forever. So everything that happens when you walk in the door for a death visit needs to happen somewhat organically. Okay. And we don't always have to be in a hurry to interject ourselves. So I do want to give you a little bit of a story that I think I've talked about it on here before. And if I have, I apologize, but we're going to bring it up again. Now that we're at episode 50 of the show, a lot of people don't just start at the beginning and listen to all of this in order. They're looking at titles of episodes and kind of cherry picking, so to speak, the content they want to consume. And so it's okay if some of this stuff overlaps and a little repetition isn't going to hurt anyone. But I've had an episode here. I had an on-call recently. Oh, hold on. My phone was ringing. I'm on call. And it was for something else. Anyway, okay. So a couple jobs ago, this was probably over a year ago, maybe a year and a half or just barely a year. I was with a family and I was on call and it was a Saturday. And so I was kind of camping out a little bit because I could just tell this patient was really close to the end and he had a bunch of his daughters that were there. And I remember sitting and speaking with one of the daughters while the other ones left the room and were just in another area of this facility that we were at. I think it was long-term care. Might have been ALF. And I looked over to the patient and I saw a change. I saw his respirations beginning to get more shallow. And I was like, hey, does he look like he's breathing slower to you? And she's like, yeah. She's like, should I go get my sisters? And I'm like, yes, absolutely. And they managed to get back in the room before he took his final breath. And I just remember sitting in a chair pretty close to him. And I just caught myself for a second. And I was like, what am I doing right here, right by this patient in their way? And so I quickly got up and moved to another corner of the room and just waited. And I could see that he took his final breath and I didn't say anything. And the reason that is important, and I just waited. Like, I wanted them to experience the moment. Because one thing I don't want to see nurses do is get into a big hurry to have the exact time of death. And, oh my gosh, I just saw him die. When can I go over there with my stethoscope? Let me get all these people out of the way so I can listen and double check and make sure I've got a good time of death. No. Like, seriously, if the time of death is 5 minutes difference, I mean, we're going to make a lot of death visits in our hospice career in homes, and it's taken us an hour to get there, and the family doesn't get to give us the time of death. As the healthcare professional, we're the ones who listen, and the time of death is when we have listened and verified no heart tones. So this is going to happen. So just because you're there and you see the patient take that last breath, it doesn't mean you got to cram past everybody and lay your stethoscope down. I'm the hospice nurse. I'm very important. Let me get over here and make this official. No, they probably took 2 or 3 minutes, maybe even 5, to just put their hands on him and just the sniffling in the room and a little bit of crying and some tears. And eventually, one of the daughters turns around and kind of looks at me, and then I go ahead and step forward, and people part and make room, and I stick my stethoscope on the chest, and I listen, okay? So we don't always have to be in a great big hurry. You know, eventually that moment will happen when people will start to look at you like, okay, shouldn't you be doing something? And then you can step into action. But let's not steal the moment from folks where they're in that moment where a patient has taken their final breath and their spirit has left their body and now it's a shell and the family is there. And, you know, they've been able to be with each other and they've been at his side. And so I just don't want us getting in a hurry to try to pronounce or trying to accomplish what it is we're there to do. There's a little bit of, you know, ebb and flow here. I think it's important to remember that different races have different rituals. I'll admit I'm here in the Midwest and it's pretty boring ethnicity wise out here. I mean, I'm close to Kansas City and, you know, you get into the urban area and you know, there's a little bit more variety. But we do have to be careful because not all races handle things the same and not all people within a single race handle things the same, right? There's still different belief systems, faiths, and things like that in different, within even different races. So you still can't assume. You can't assume, well, I had this one Asian family that had to do their chanting, so you guys need to do a bunch of chanting, right? You know, like we're not assuming these kinds of things. I've had some interesting experience with Hispanic families and the way, at least in this one situation, the way the family just came pouring through the door once the patient passed and the women were all going up to him and kind of shaking him a little bit, saying, no siesta, no siesta. And the men were just sitting around the home, calm, not being super emotional. And you can tell it was just a cultural thing. The women all took turns with him one-on-one, no siesta, no siesta. And they just kept coming in the front door because we were in a very Hispanic part of town and they all knew each other. And it was just one, you know, friend or family member after another. The females came in and, you know, they didn't shake him hard, right? I mean, it was just this loving nudge, hey, no siesta. And the men were just sitting in the living room being calm. And it's just, so it's just different. And we have to be open and ready for that. And so one of the questions that I got asked is, do you have to stay? What are the requirements on that? And so I want to talk about that here just a little bit on just some variety and variations on that. I will remind you that you've got to remember your company policy, okay? What does your company policy say about staying, okay? Because each agency can be a little bit different sometimes. And let's be honest, after hours and on the weekends, it can get a little bit crazy. So it doesn't mean that, you know, not every agency is going to expect you to stay forever, no matter what. Okay. For instance, like sometimes it doesn't hurt to reach out to your manager if you've got a full day or a lot's going on, because a chaplain can sit and wait for the funeral home, social worker can, a home health aide. So a lot of times when I haven't, especially during the day shift, you know, sometimes after hours or on the weekends, if it's a little bit slower of a weekend, you can definitely hang out a little bit and it's not a big deal. But like when we're going into a weekend here at my agency, and I see that we have a lot of people on daily visits because we have a lot of patients who are actively dying, I'll reach out to one of my home health aides to see if they want to do a little on call for the weekend and be available to sit and wait for funeral homes. And usually one of them will sign up for it and I'll pay them a couple bucks an hour for the whole weekend to just keep the phone with them. And then if they go out, I give them time and a half or whatever. And it just frees up the nurse to be able, like if she's headed to a death visit, she can reach out to that home health aide and say, hey, I'm headed to a death visit. Things are as crazy as James thought they would be. So why don't you start getting around and I'll see you in about an hour or so, you know, and you can sit while and wait for the funeral home, right? there's been times if you're at a nursing home and the call has come in and maybe the family has already left or the family's not coming, you can kind of wander up to the nurse's station and say, hey, is there anything else you need from me? And she might, if she says something like, well, you're going to stay till the funeral home gets here. Well, yeah, obviously. Oops. Right. But I don't know if there's any other paperwork you need from me or, you know what I mean? I mean, you can kind of gauge things and I'm not trying to help you find ways to get out of there, but you do need to be a little bit strategic in this work sometimes, because there are going to be times when things are going to get odd at a death visit and you could end up being there for a really long amount of time and it could really interfere with your other responsibilities of your job. Okay. And so what if they're waiting on a family member? All right. Well, find out what that time frame looks like for the family member to arrive. If they're like, you know, cause sometimes, so you're in there and they've allowed you to do they've allowed you to pronounce and everybody's sitting around and you want to kind of figure out who might be running the show and go up to them and say, hey, you know, at this time I can go ahead and reach out to the funeral home unless you guys are waiting on somebody. And so if they do say, yeah, we've got somebody headed this way and it's good to find out, well, what's that look like? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Who you've got coming? Well, his brother's trying to get here and he knows he's already passed, but he's really wanting to see him before the funeral home picks him up. Okay. Well, what's that time frame look like? Okay. And if they say something like, oh, it's going to be about 6 hours before he gets here. Okay, this is a whole different deal, right? And what you can do is you can call the funeral home, give them the information, and tell them don't come yet. So you can talk to the family and say, hey, that's fine. Let me at least touch base with the funeral home for you, give them the important information, and we can let them know that you're not ready to have the body removed yet, and they can wait. Okay. So the funeral home doesn't have to show up the second you call them. But also if the family says that, you can say, okay, you know, and there's kind of different ways to put this, but if you know that it's going to be 4 to 5 hours before, they want the body removed, you need to begin to engage them on that and say, okay, and that's fine. We can get a hold of the funeral home and let them know what's going on, but we can also let them know that you are not ready to have the body picked up yet, and then you guys can reach out to them once you are ready. Because a couple of different things need to happen in this kind of a scenario. Ideally, you should be able to leave while they wait for this other family member, and then they could have an option of requesting that hospice return when they're ready to call the funeral home. And then some families are like, no, if they look at you like you're nuts and they do expect you to spend the next 6 hours with them, it is time to reach out to your manager ASAP. Say, okay, let me reach out to my manager so that you can see if somebody else from the team can come out and sit and wait. And that is going to happen, right? Because different people have different levels of comfort when it comes to a deceased person in their house, okay? And so don't be afraid to reach out to your leadership. I've had patients and families saying, I've showed up and patients, they have already called the funeral home. Like, we already called the funeral home. Is that okay? Yeah, but I still got to do my part. Like, I hope that, you know, I mean, that doesn't happen quite as much. It can happen a lot when you have the family's nurses or have worked long-term care, or one of them's been a hospice nurse and they're just like, I'll call the family. But so there's a lot of variance in here, and some of my stories that I'm going to tell you here in a little bit, I kind of hit on some of the different things I've run into and the different things I've seen. But you know, I don't know if your company has a policy that you just are not allowed to leave until that body's been picked up and removed. That's between you and them. I don't have that policy at my agency. The state of Missouri, state of Kansas don't require that kind of thing. And so the families will call back out if they want you to go because another family's coming. It's going to be 2 or 3 hours. They might go ahead and just leave, you know, and they might ask you to just leave and we'll call the funeral home later. You know, listen, I don't think, you know, 99% of the time families have some trickery up their sleeve and they're just looking forward to keeping the patient in the house for the next, you know, 17 years or anything creepy or weird like that. You just, like I said, you need to get with your agency. You definitely want to still stay in contact with them and say, hey, we still need to know, you know, we're going to reach back out to you or we need you to reach back out to us. And let us know when the funeral home is, you know, does show up. And so I realize that there's some variance here and some weird things that can happen. But my point is that you got to let the family handle this the way that they want to handle it. And I have had families who are of Asian and do a lot of the chanting, and they're not going to want that body picked up for many, many hours. And they have to be allowed to complete and do what it is they need to do for their religion or belief system or culture or whatever that is. And it might involve many hours of you not being there, and that's okay. All right. So there's a lot of nuance to that. Let's talk about hygiene, the post-mortem care. There's a lot of opinion out there on this, and I may or may not make some friends with this one, but it's okay. So I'm a little bit different in this department, and however you want to do it and what your beliefs are and what you feel like is necessary, it's fine when it comes to post-mortem care on patients. I do have a few tips and things to think about. Obviously, anybody who is super soiled, if they've been vomiting or they've been bleeding, anything that is very disconcerting to see, I am certainly getting that patient cleaned up as best I can. But I'll tell you, a full bed bath is not some kind of hospice medical requirement, okay? I mean, if we stop and think about what happens when they go to the mortician and what the funeral home is going to do to and with them, like, I get that we want to bathe people, but yikes, you know, I'm not big into it. It doesn't mean I don't do it. If a family member walks up to me and says, "So we're going to do a bath, right?" Oh, absolutely. Of course. But I don't do it every time, all the time. It just kind of depends on the situation. You know, and another tip for all of you to consider, we get real excited about removing all of the tubes and things out of patients when they die at home. Or in a nursing home, and I do not remove catheters completely. I will drain the bag, but I don't always remove all the tubes on patients. I empty as much as I can so it's not leaking all over the place, but I have had many removal technicians thank me for not pulling the catheter completely out because after a patient dies, you know, they lose all that elasticity of all their muscles and everything, and including the bladder, and they've had this tube up there for months on end, and we go to pull it out and urine comes leaking out all over the place and all over the gurney that they're using, all over their van that they pick up the bodies and remove them and take them to the funeral home with. So a lot of them have thanked me for not pulling out the catheter. So I'll drain it, obviously, and I'll get it up, you know, on them or, you know, by them in the bed or whatever, but I don't always remove it. So listen, every agency is different. You need to follow what your agency is like. A lot of nurses, I've had nurses look at me and think I was crazy because I didn't give every single patient who died a big bed bath. And it just, I'm just a little bit different about it. I make sure that I have a patient that's clean and not stinky. And if we're not stinky or gross or anything, I don't always bathe them. Okay. And you know what? It's okay. I'm not violating anything. How about clothing? One of the questions that she asked me in the email had to do with what, you know, she had somebody who wanted to be put in a dress or a wedding gown or whatever. I have showed up and had people say, hey, we need to get him in his suit and tie. He would never want to leave in this condition in a gown. Can we please do that? Man, that is hard, trying to dress a dead person at home in their bed is very difficult. So I have put on suits and ties. I actually do know how to tie a tie. I know you're shocked. I've showed up with a daughter who was putting overalls on her dad. She just always remembered him having overalls, and she put the overalls on him. She put his ink pen in the front of the overalls, just like he always has. I've had people say, no, let's take out his teeth. I've had people say, that looks funny. Can we please put his teeth in? Yes. Let the funeral home know when they get there. They'll mark all that stuff down. Like, everybody can be different when it comes to the clothing and whether or not they want clothes on their loved one. Some people just don't care. It's a shell. My faith tells me he's not there anymore. It's just a body. Let it go. But other people, man, I have had to put on the hard, slacks, socks, dress shoes, dress shirt tucked in, belt, tie. Oh my gosh. Well, t-shirt first, then the dress shirt, and it's long sleeve. And then let's get the tie on him and tie it right. And thankfully I know how to do a tie. So everybody's different. If they want grandma in her wedding gown because that was one of her wishes, put her in the wedding gown. Let's not get all hung up on any rules or anything. It's all okay. So now I want to get in. Let's see, we're 31 minutes in. I think we're doing good on time. I want to share with you guys just some of my stories and what I have learned. This is the only way I know to really maybe help you guys out and provide you with some feedback that might be helpful, is just to talk about some of the stories and events and what I learned, what I wish I could have done differently or should have, or what I was proud that I did. The first story I will tell you is I forget. I'm trying to remember. I don't think I had even been working for this company for very long. It might have been only in my second week or something. And we were shorthanded. And I got a call, or the DON walked up to me. Gosh, it's been a few years, and was like, "Hey, we got this patient. The nurse had to call in today. She needs to be seen first thing this morning. She's been active for 2 or 3 days. Can you get out there?" And I'm like, "Sure." And I get there, and the patient is obviously active and really imminent, right? So I'm going to hang out, and there's a son and a daughter, right? Brother and sister are there. And when she stops breathing, the sister hasn't noticed. The brother has noticed that she's not breathing, and the sister hasn't. So I get up and I walk over there and I get out my stethoscope and I start listening to her, and the sister starts getting super anxious, this daughter, and is like, what's going on? What are you doing? And I'm like, well, I'm listening. Let me listen. And I listen for a little bit and no heart sounds. And so I take off my stethoscope, and I usually tell people the time of death. And I'm like, it was probably in the morning, so we'll just say, I said 9:46. And she's like, what? 9:46 what? And I'm like, well, your mom has passed. And she's like, wait, what? She's passed. And she's like, and she starts this major panic, and she's like, well, start CPR and call 911. What are you doing? Let's go. And I'm like a little bit shocked, right? Because she's a DNR, and the son's not freaking out, but she's just losing it. And I kind of look, I wait for a minute, like, we got to be the calm in the room, right? So I'm not going to get on this roller coaster with her. And so I look over at the brother, and he looks at me, and he can tell I'm waiting for him to get up and do his job, because he it's his mama, and from what I knew, she was living with him. And so he stood up and went over to her and calmed her down and said, sis, she doesn't want all of those things. Like, let's just stop. And he managed to get his sister calmed down and relaxed. And so, that that was, I mean, I guess my biggest lesson for all of us in that one is to, you know, to not panic and all of a sudden start calling 911 and starting CPR. Now, if you got a whole room of people screaming at you, that's a whole nother situation. But I could tell that if the brother was to kind of come to for just a second, he would be able to calm his sister down.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I have had some members at the hospice nursing community request some kind of a support group to help fight burnout. And so I have started 2 burnout support groups at the hospicenursingcommunity.com just to help everybody. And so these support groups meet twice a month on the second Thursday and the second Sunday of the month. And so we're going to be doing that. And I wanted to make sure you understood or knew that these will be faith-friendly support groups. And it doesn't mean they'll be preaching or anything strange like that, but I might use devotionals. I might pull something out of the Bible, maybe out of Psalms or something, but just there might be sections of the group that deal with matters of faith. And I hope that is of interest to you. It can be found in the community events section of the community. So if you would consider joining, I think it would help you. It's going to help me. I need it, I think, as much as anybody does. So join a burnout support group at thehospicenursingcommunity.com. You just can't predict what somebody's going to do in that very moment. Here's another interesting one that I did about 2 years ago. Is we had a death call come in and I needed to go do it because, well, probably we were shorthanded again somewhere, right? We're always shorthanded. And so I get there and I go and the patient is downstairs. This is a house that does not have, like, it has a really huge basement, but it's not a walkout basement, right? And it has this spiral stairs that lead into the basement, and the patient is down there in a corner, and I show up and he's obviously passed, and I do my job, I listen to him and all of that. And so I call the funeral home and I'm hanging out, I'm staying. You know, I do want people to know that probably 99% of the time I stay until the funeral. I don't want people to think, gosh, James just, he bails every chance he gets and doesn't want to stay. That's not the case. 99.9% of the time I stay. But anyway, so the funeral home gets there and they come downstairs they're always going to come in and get a lay of the land before they start to bring in a gurney or anything to remove the body. And they come down and they're like, oh boy, they're like, this one's going to be a challenge. And man, I just spaced it out for some reason. Like, I was not on my best game that day. And so when they came down the stairs, they came without a gurney and came with this big, heavy piece of white plastic. Okay. And they were like, we are not going to be able, they're talking to me and they're like, we are not going to be able to get him, you know, out of, you know, and upstairs with our gurney. We're going to have to use this big piece of plastic here as a lift. You know, they didn't wrap him up in it like, you know, like a burrito or something where, you know, he's all covered. But I really, really did not have my brain plugged in, because what I should have done was I should have went upstairs to the family and just said, hey, why don't you guys step outside for just a minute? Because I don't want you, like, I needed to find a way to get them outside just because this was going to look weird, right? And I didn't do it. And I'll just tell you what happened, because they get him on, you know, they get this big piece of plastic and they put him on it. Nobody's in the room with us down in the corner of this basement, and it's all finished. So don't think all concrete. It's a very nice basement. I don't know why I felt the need to tell you that. So it's just, it's not creepy. And so we get him on it and they go to take him upstairs, and the family is all down there at the bottom of the steps that they have to go, and they freak out. Oh my God, they're putting him in a trash bag. Why is he in a trash bag? And I said, I'm just in the moment. I'm like, it's not a trash bag. I said, it's a lift sheet, because the gurney will not get around your spiral stairs here. And I wished, and she freaked out. Oh my God, he's in a trash bag. This is the most horrible thing I've ever seen. This is awful. And I felt horrible. And I wished that I would have brought him outside and said, hey, listen, they're not going to be able to use the gurney and it's going to look weird. And I don't want you guys to feel uncomfortable. Please come step outside until they get him upstairs and on the gurney. Because it really would have saved them the trauma. And I felt really horrible after I left there because they had to have that picture in their head and they were really freaked out. And so by the when we got to the top of the stairs and we lifted him on the gurney, you know, he got all straightened out on there and they, you know, they put like the big velvet cover and lift it down so people can see their loved one. And I just wish I would have done that better. So they learn a lesson from me on that one. Then you're going to have situations when the family doesn't even care. So the only story I can think of is a patient I took care of who really had estranged her family. Okay, so there is no family. And even they did manage to come and see her before she passed, but was going to have nothing to do with anything afterwards. And she had no pre-planned anything. And the family told me over the phone, we are not accepting any responsibility financially for her. And we're just not doing anything. We're not paying for anything. Like wherever she goes from here, we don't care. Now, it's real easy to try to judge people like that. And it is just not our place. This situation was building over decades. It's not going to change today just because somebody has died. And so in those kind of situations, you're calling the county coroner. I had to call the county coroner, explain to them the situation, and they said, okay. And they have contracts. The county coroner has contracts with funeral homes. And so they called their own funeral home and said, hey, they're coming out. I said, okay. Now, this is certainly a situation where you don't have to stay. It was at a nursing home. And the staff there was like, see you later, bro. Yeah, I had a good relationship there, and they just didn't see the point of me staying around there. No family was ever going to come. It was just a body getting removed from the facility. And so that's going to be a strange situation for you, and it's going to be the county coroner that you call because the family's not taking responsibility. The coroner will get them. I don't even know what the coroner does after that. All I know is you call them, and it gets done. Here's one that was fairly hard. It was a Christmas Eve. This is just an example of being somewhere forever because I got there at like 11 o'clock and I didn't leave till 2 or 3 in the morning because it was Christmas Eve, right? And the funeral homes probably just there wasn't a lot of staff working and that's how many hours it took for the funeral home to show up. And so I was there for many, many hours. And as a reminder, we don't waste waiting. You guys have heard me say that in episodes before. We don't waste waiting. So I did IDT notes. Like I found work to do while I waited and I was there for 4 hours. And they let me call the funeral home pretty quick because it just turned out I was case managing this patient. I was a clinical team lead at the time. So it was a couple jobs ago. And so I knew everybody, so it was kind of casual, but they definitely weren't like if they would have said, hey, we got it from here, James, like it's Christmas Eve, go home. But they did not. So I didn't bring it up. Right. You got to be able to read the room. So it was many hours and don't waste waiting. I got a lot done that night, a lot. Then I had a family member who did not want to watch the funeral home come and take out her husband. He had been a Vietnam veteran and she was like, this is way too vulnerable for him and I don't want to see it. So I am going to go in this other room. You can let me know when he is gone. And that's exactly what I did. She was very thankful and I was there for the funeral home and the funeral company got there to remove the body and they were like, is there anybody else here? I said, yes, the wife is over in the other room, but she doesn't want to see this happen. And so I helped him remove the body and then let her know when he was gone. I straightened up the room and took care of the sheets for her, stripped the bed. But that was a real big deal, okay? Then, here's another one for you. I was called to a death visit because the daughter showed up and the patient was on the floor dead. She looked like she had fallen face first on the floor, smack, and she just had died while walking. And so I kind of rolled her over and got a pillow to put under her head and a blanket to cover her up with so it looked a little more natural because it was kind of strange her all sprawled out there. And as a side note, it is like when your family is standing there and somebody's on the floor and the funeral home shows up, be sure to let them know that what they're getting ready to see can be disconcerting, because trying to get somebody on a gurney who's laying on the floor, their arms are flopping, their legs are flopping, their head, like we try to protect it, but it can be kind of ugly. But this family, they were like, no, we want to be here. And they're like, in fact, is it okay if I FaceTime my sister while you guys do this? And I'm like, I'm looking at the funeral director, and the funeral director's looking at me, and we're like, okay. And she did. She FaceTimed her sister and watched us lift her off of the floor. And I think we got one of the plastic sheets underneath her because it's hard to get people off the floor and onto a gurney. Luckily, this person wasn't huge. And we lifted her up and got her up there. And she FaceTimed her and her sister the whole thing, you know, is flopping arms and the head kind of bouncing around. And they were just smiles and it was all fine. But, you know, That was kind of a weird one. Okay, so this story I have told before on the show, and I think it was the episode where I talk about don't be a hero, and it was a, but there's part of the story I haven't told, okay? The part that I did tell was that this guy was taking care of his father for hospice, but he didn't really know his father because he got put up for adoption when he was a baby, basically. And he happened to find his father. We're here in Kansas City. He found his father like out west somewhere, like New Mexico, Arizona. I can't remember where. Found out that he was terminal and homeless and brought him back to take care of him in his home. Like, what an amazing story, right? You know, he didn't have a lot of emotion towards his dad. I mean, why would he, since he didn't really know him? But he just felt this kinship responsibility to him and would take care of him. And so I remember this was when I was within my first year of being a hospice nurse. And my buddy Mike called me and said, hey, your patient just passed. You need to get out there and see him and, you know, pronounce and do the death visit. I'm like, okay. So I drive down there and I knock on the door and his son meets me at the door and says, man, dad's definitely gone. But I mean, I really think he looks so at peace. I'm so glad I did this for him. And he looks like he just, you know, he went quietly in his sleep. So I get up the stairs and I go into his room and I wish you could see the face that I'm making, but his dad was, he was gone. He definitely was no longer with us, but he was practically sitting up in his hospital bed and had this look of terror on his face. His eyes were wide open. His mouth was wide open and he had, his face was kind of scrunched up. I mean, it looked horrible. And the son comes up behind me and looks at him and says, see, doesn't he look at peace? And now all of his pain is over. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And it's just, it's a good lesson to just remind us that he doesn't need a dose of reality from us. If he's looking at his dad, who's no longer with us, and he needs to know that you know, he did as best as he could, I don't need to sit there and go, well, if you look at his face, he might have died in misery. You know, I don't know what he looked. We don't got to do that to people. You know, we don't always got to be, well, we just tell them the truth all the time. I mean, listen, you got to know when to go. Yeah, sure. comfortable. Yeah, good job. And not like get all hung up in the moment and want to correct everybody. But it was a little overwhelming when I walked in the door and he's got this wide-eyed face all scrunched up look on his face. But his son just did what he could and did the best he could and didn't need to have been involved at all. But here he's taking care of his dying dad for several months. I took care of them for a while. So, and then finally, I mentioned earlier the Hispanic family that were yelling, "No siesta, no siesta." Well, I got to tell you a story about this. Okay. The full story on that patient. So I took care of that patient just for a few weeks. Okay. And I really loved this family. They always just had a, you know, there was a major language barrier. There was one high school girl who really handled a lot of the communication for me. So when I, you know, when I did this death visit, they had a lot of family still coming. And they were like, you know, I was like, we really got to pick a funeral home because they hadn't even done that, right? And so I got with the one high school girl to help me with the language and everything. And so one of the sons came over and I had a list of funeral homes that we tried to keep on us. And they found one that like had a Spanish name or something that they recognized. And he pointed at it and I got it taken care of. And the daughter's like, you can leave right now. We have a whole bunch of family. You know, sometimes with the Hispanic community, they will get in bed with their loved one and get photos taken. I mean, they were cooking and making meals like they were going to do a celebration of life thing. Okay. And they didn't need me, somebody who doesn't understand anything that's going on, sitting around in their house because we hadn't called the funeral home. And they're like, so I reached out to the funeral home and the daughter was like, just leave. It's fine. And it was early in the morning. It was like at 8 a.m. and we had IDT. So I went over to the IDT, and while I'm in IDT, the receptionist knocks on our door and they open it, and she's motioning at me with her finger, you know, like, come here, come here. And so I get up and I go out there, and she's like, yeah, the Gonzalez family, they weren't really Gonzalez, but okay, that's a little cliche, but she's like, they just called and didn't you just do a death visit there? But they're saying they need a visit. And I'm sure I just went so pale and turned white as a sheet. And so I called, and this daughter answers, and she's like, yeah, we don't think he's dead. He's still breathing. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, you know, I couldn't breathe. I wasn't breathing anymore. And so I couldn't leave. It was IDT. So they paged out to all the staff that wasn't in IDT and said, hey, can somebody go by and double check? And I was a nervous wreck until one of the LPNs got there and went in and checked, and he calls me and he's like, he's gone. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And Dr. Link was awesome. He came to me afterwards and he said, okay, James, listen, and this is my advice to all of you. Don't be in a hurry to pronounce. He's like, listen, you're going to feel pressure. Everybody's staring at you. And a minute can feel like a week. And he said, don't be afraid to ask people to be quiet, to ask loud people to leave the room, and really close your eyes and listen for 5 minutes if you need to, right? Don't be in a hurry. And I do that now. I listen for a really long time. And I hold the stethoscope on there. I don't get in a hurry. If I'm there when the patient actually expires, I don't get into this big hurry to go and listen to them, even if nobody cares. Like that one story I told you, everybody was circled, so I need to give them room. But man, they'll have those agonal breaths. And the last thing you want is to have your stethoscope on them trying to listen, and they have another huge agonal breath, and it freaks everybody out. So I will always sit in the corner and just say, let's just wait a minute and make sure we could have another breath here. And sure enough, half the time they'll have another one of those big breaths. And then I'll be like, okay, I think we're there, and I'll go and I'll stick my stethoscope on there. But I really, if the family gets too loud, I'll make them stop and I'll say, I'm sorry, give me just a second here, and I'll stick it back on them and not be in a rush. Okay. And I think that's the biggest lesson in all of this, you know, is definitely to not be in a big hurry all the time. You know, we do want to get that funeral home called, and we don't want to be stuck there when we don't have to be. But also, there's just a lot of variety, as you can tell, when it comes to these death visits. And no two death visits are alike. No two removals are alike. I've seen patients almost get lost off of gurneys trying to get them down all the tight stairs at these and these apartment buildings and stuff. So a lot of crazy things can happen. And so just know that that's a thing, that the death visits are complicated and no two are alike, and everybody's belief systems. I mean, if one of my family, you know, my parents or whatever, if they're ever on hospice or whatever, I'm going to be like, hey, hit the road, funeral home's coming, you're good. You got, you know, I'm going to be different because of what I've done for a living. And so it's just, it's different for every patient's different. Every agency is different. Every nurse is different. Some nurses are like, you don't bathe your patients all the time, James? What's wrong with you? That's gross. Or you are a bad nurse. See, y'all finally caught up with me. But it's just every situation is different. And it's, we don't got to walk in the door with all of our preconceived ideas. We need to be able to read the room. And so there you go. I hope this has been a helpful episode. It's a lot of content. Would you leave a review on like your podcast app, not just the stars? Somebody did give me a 1-star. That's funny. I keep saying that. Or call me at 816-834-9191. Leave a voicemail or a text message. Email me at james@confessionsofahospicenurse.net. Or join the hospice nursing community at thehospicenursingcommunity.com. It's $5 a month. Would love to have you there. Over pushing 45 training, coaching, group coaching videos with all kinds of tips and tricks and hints. So I hope you'll consider that, becoming a part of the community. Just remember, hospice doesn't get easier. You just get better at it. And let's get better at it together. This has been episode 50 of the Hospice Nursing Podcast for March 3rd, 2024.